Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the Voluntary Consensus Standards for Nursing Homes Steering Committee follow-up call. This is the first of two follow-up calls. Thank you for joining us today. This is Suzanne Taberge from NQF. I'm the project manager here, and I just want to make a couple of quick announcements before we get started. As Lori said, our operator, this call will be recorded, and please remember that this is a live phone line, so if you can mute your phone, that would be great. And please don't put us on hold, because then we all hear your lovely hold music. So before we get started with the content of the call, I'd just like to do a quick roll call. So please just introduce yourself so we know who's on the steering committee and Measure Developers is on the line.
Hi, this is Sonia.
Whoever just said that, it got cut off, so we missed who that was.
Oh, Stella Mandel from CMS.
Great.
Judy Sangle from ARC.
Bob Baskin from ARC.
Judy Tobin from CMS.
Darlene Thompson from Kindred.
Barbara Gates from RTI.
Hi, Thomas Griebling from the University of Kansas and the American Urological Association.
Hi, this is Kathleen Niedert from Western Home Communities in Cedar Falls, Iowa.
Hi, this is Bill Kubat from the Good Samaritan Society.
Bruce Boysenault, Niagara Health Quality Coalition.
Bob Zorowitz, Village Nursing Home in New York.
Christine Miller, University of Minnesota.
Betty Franzen, ANAC.
David Gifford, Rhode Island, Department of Health.
Heidi Gill, Plaintree.
Helen Burston, NQF.
Del Conyers, NQF.
Emma Nakamovitz, NQF. Anyone else?
Karen Ginsberg from WestEd.
All right, anybody else think
that? Roberta Constantine will be joining us. It sounds like she might be having problems getting into the line.
Okay. Well, we've got a few minutes, but if she can't get in by the time we get to the your measures, please let me know.
Okay.
Hi, I am on
a
line. Hello, this is Roberta Constantine.
Oh, great.
Sorry, I don't think you could hear me the previous.
All right, I think that must be everybody. So let's go ahead and get started. Just to quickly go over the goals of the meeting, we're going to be talking about the nursing homes CAHPS measures that were submitted last week. And as you all remember, this was identified as a gap during the steering committee meeting. And so these were sent in to fill that gap area. We're also going to be discussing the care transition measure, which was just endorsed by another committee here at NQF. And Helen, if you want to just talk real quick now so we can make sure we get that in.
Sure. Hi, everybody. This is Helen Burston. We discussed this at the end of the last steering committee that NQF has a currently endorsed measure, the CTM3, the care transitions measure.
Fine. And we'll be right back with you.
One moment.
Oh, boy. Hopefully that'll go away. That has already been endorsed. It was actually just re-endorsed by the Board of Directors recently since it was up for measure maintenance. It is endorsed at the facility level, which is quite broad. We had discussed with Eric Coleman, who I believe will join you in the call a little bit later, the possibility of thinking about doing some minor tweaks to the survey instrument to make it applicable for nursing homes, and he has done that. We shared that with you. So we don't need the committee to approve it per se in terms of it's already an endorsed measure. We just thought that you might have some questions for Eric about implementation, and I thought it might be important just to remind people this could be a very applicable measure for nursing homes, that if you guys were comfortable, we would potentially put it forward as part of the report of another potential approved measure that could be used to aid with transitions in nursing homes. I hope that's clear.
Thank you.
Sure.
And, yes, Eric Coleman will be joining us later, so have time for questions then. And then the last item on the agenda for today is discussing the changes that were the steering committee asked for to the CMS measures, and CMS and RTI will speak to those. So you all have seen the next couple of slides before. I just wanted to send them along in case you needed a reference point about conditions for consideration and the areas that we need to look at. In terms of voting on the measures, you will need to vote both on the CAPS measures and on the CMS measures. However, we don't do voting on the call. That will be done after the call via an electronic survey that we'll be sending out. I think we'll be sending that out on Monday. And you will just go through and vote on the sub-criteria and then on your actual vote whether or not to endorse the measure. And we'll have that survey will be open just for a couple days because we want to collect that pretty quickly. And there are a few steering committee members who are not able to make this call today. So we'll be sending them the notes from the call early next week and asking them to vote after they've reviewed the notes. So just to go over very quickly, the voting options for the CAPS measures are recommend for endorsement as written, recommend for time-limited endorsement if they're untested, and the first one, number 26, is an untested measure, so that one would only be eligible for time-limited endorsement. And then finally, do not recommend for endorsement. So, Judy, if you're on the line and
yes.
ready to talk, go for it.
Okay. There are we ARC and the CAPS consortium have developed three sets of surveys for the nursing home population. Generally, people view the resident population as divided into short stay or those who are in more post-acute care population versus the long stay population. And I think it's generally agreed that trying to interview the resident themselves is sort of the gold standard, trying to hear the voice of the patient experience, the resident experience. But we realize that may not always be feasible. But CMS had charged ARC and the CAPS team with developing a long-stay resident survey. Well, even prior to that, just even looking at the feasibility of doing some type of a CAPS survey for the long-stay resident. And we went through a lot of consultation, and it was decided this was feasible. But we did choose this one to be an in-person survey, and it is unique in the CAPS setting because it does combine, in addition to quality of care, it also has quality of life items, since for long-stay residents, that's also where they live. We have preliminary guidelines for doing the in-person administration that is up on the CAPS website. There are five composites in the long-stay questionnaire, and that's environment, communication, respect, which is a traditional CAPS one, and then also care, some aspects of care, and then autonomy and activity, which is unique to the quality of life aspect of the long-stay resident. And from our pilot, we pilot tested this in May to June of 2005, and on average, about 83% of the residents did the in-person interview were 20 minutes or less. So, and actually, we did an eighth round of cognitive testing on this survey post-pilot. So in 2006, we did some more testing and did some tweaks to the questionnaire. I'm trying to think of anything else right now. It does not have case mix. We had spent a lot of our resources mostly on deciding who could be interviewed, and we ended up with the same rule that we shared with Deb Saliba, which is being used in MDS 3.0, which is a three-question rule. If someone cannot respond to three questions in a row, you stop interviewing. I'm trying to think if there's anything else. So at this point, we're working on a revision and of the composites, because we have, unlike other most CAPS items, it has a rating, mixed ratings, 0 to 10 ratings, with some 3-point scale items of reports. So So we may be trying to divide that out. We're doing that revision at the moment. And we're also, with another source of data from Alberta, Canada, going to be testing the environmental room setup questions, which were the ones that we did after the pilot test. And we have some estimates of what it costs to do a completed survey. And we know that the cost has been somewhat of an issue to implement. And I know that some people have, like the state of Ohio, with a different instrument, has alternated resident and family surveys. So one year they'll pay more money for the in-person survey of residents, and then they'll alternate it with the less expensive mail version of a family survey. The short-stay resident, is the one that's actually we developed at the same time and tested in 2005, but the sample size was not robust enough. We had, in the fall of 2009, ARC and Maryland Healthcare Commission signed an agreement so that they would implement our survey when they did their family survey as well, and we would do the analysis. So we're right in the middle of the analysis. And it is a mail survey, which is obviously less costly. It's about $25 a complete estimate to do with two rounds of mail. And the earlier analysis we did with MDS data showed that those who were short stay had much better cognitive status, so we decided the mail survey was feasible. And right now we're still doing the factor analysis, so don't really have a lot to report. It looks like some of the possibly autonomy may not be an important item for the short stay population. That's an easy possibility. I'm trying to think of what else. But there are about 2 million Medicare SNF short stay admissions a year. So we think that this is still an important population to reach. Now, for the third survey is for family members, and we're not trying to have this be a proxy survey. We realize that it's meant more as a complement to the resident survey, but we know that the family members are an important caregiver population, and they certainly can substitute for those who cannot respond because of cognitive impairment. So we did that testing in 2006 to 2007, and that has four composites, and that's meeting basic needs, nurse aids and kindness and respect towards the resident, the nursing home provision of information and encouraging involvement. And then another last one is nursing home staff, care of belongings, and cleanliness. And this one we did have case mix adjusters, which is respondent age, respondent education, whether the respondent believes the resident will live permanently in a nursing home, and whether the respondent believes the resident is capable of daily decision making. So that one, we should have the analysis done by the end of the year. And our estimate from, is about $25 to do that survey per completed survey. So any questions or any other things people would like to know about the survey?
Did you mention the long, this is Bob Zorowitz, Village Nursing Home.
Uh-huh.
Maybe I was asleep. Did you mention anything about the long stay survey?
Yes, that was the first one.
Oh, okay.
Talked about. Sorry. So we're looking for a population who've been there at least 30 days with no plan discharge.
Oh, and cost?
And the cost, it's in person, and this is from 2005. The direct costs were $57, but that's more like as a research operation. There may be a lot of other things to consider. I couldn't get a cost per complete from Ohio, and I'm in the process of getting that information. But I think Ohio is able to do it for less money than that.
Okay.
This is Kathleen.
But if we're seeing 30 days, when we were in Washington, didn't we do 100 days for long-term stay?
Most of the other quality measures, 100 days was the cutoff for long stay.
So why are we changing this one to 30, or why was it suggested we change this one to 30?
Well, this is what we were working with in 2005, 2004, when we designed the field test, that somebody had been there. The expert opinion was that someone should have been in the facility at least 30 days to somewhat stabilize in their you know, perception of the nursing home. Shorter than that, that they might have a very different still adjustment period.
But I don't. I think that 30 days. We even talk to families, at least at the nursing home where I'm at the administrator. We talk to families and tell them, because our first care conference is at usually 5 to 10 days, and then our before we even do the care plan, and then so you're looking at 25 days for, you know, a rough estimate for your initial full care conference. And we tell them even then, the resident is going to have a totally different idea after when we do their first quarterly. Because I don't think any of us settle into a nursing home in 30 days. Our expectations are, quite different. So I don't particularly like the 30-day cutoff.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But, I mean, I'm just one of this whole steering committee, but that's my opinion.
This is Chris Miller. The intent of the long stay CAHPS measure is for those persons who are going to be living at this nursing home likely until the day they leave. But that's the general intent. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah, I mean, that's why we, at that time, MDS 2.0 had the Section Q, which was saying no discharge plan within 90 days.
So that it's that item plus 30 days is what's needed to complete this.
Right, and I know the MDS 3.0 just sort of doesn't have a day discharge, just says nothing planned or... I don't have it in front of me right now.
Judy, this is Bill Kubat.
Yes.
I understand on the long stay that the methodology of personal interview is, you know, the gold standard is the compelling argument as you folks perceive it. On the other two, those are mail-in.
Mm-hmm.
Can you speak to why there's a different methodology here than there is with HCAHPS and home health CAHPS, where there's been a core set of questions that are, you know, defined as the specs, and then those are embedded within instruments of public vendors?
Well, what happens is, and the way the CAHPS surveys will work, if you choose to call it a CAHPS survey, is that people can insert additional questions and after the core set of questions and before the about you or the demographic section of the questionnaire. So that's where existing vendors can keep whatever questions, additional questions they may be trending.
I think if we can move into the review portion of the call, because we have a limited amount of time, I'd like to ask the primary reviewer for Measure 26, which is the discharge resident instrument, to just kind of lead us through the measure. And I believe that was Heidi Gill, am I right?
Yes, it is. Good afternoon, everybody. I was real excited that this was brought forth, Judy, and
mm-hmm.
I think it's a highly important measure. And know that there is some initial testing, of course, that wasn't as robust, and but I thought the questions were really clear and well phrased. But I thought in terms of its need for high impact, in terms of really, you know, measuring and improving culture change initiatives, if you will, I thought that there were definitely areas that were missing. And then when we look at the needs of short-term residents, I also had some concerns in terms of the questions. In terms of, but the importance is really strong, and I really hope we can, you know, continue to, you know, just I look forward to everyone's feedback as well on some of these questions and how they were presented. The first one in terms of the measure specification was that we're looking at a sampling that is after 5 days of admission. And I just wanted to mention that I think that short-term rehab is really evaluating that 24 to 48-hour period in short-term rehab from an experience standpoint, from a customer service standpoint, but also from the concept of transitions of care and sort of how well has that transition from the potentially the hospital into the nursing home gone. So I just sort of question whether or not, you know, that's something to consider. Certainly in the hospitals, they're doing the HCAPs if a person stays overnight. So I just throw that out to the group for discussion and question. In terms of the questions, and you mentioned autonomy being a piece that may not be required, but the new interpretive guidelines for quality of life is really focused on individualizing care as it relates to rhythms and routines. And I'm not sure if it's just the questions that we're asking, because certainly the choice of going to the dining room, which is in the survey, is one. We find that short-term rehab residents don't often like to, although we want to encourage that, of course. But their questions may be, and autonomy may be more around the flexibility of the mealtime and the variety of food. And I didn't see questions sort of listed there, as well as there was a choice of bedtime, but not choice of waking time. And we find that, particularly in rehab, individuals that at times both waking and sleeping times really affect the quality of rehab and what they've been used to as their core routine all along. So we really encourage short-term rehab to really focus on that. The assistance with bathing and showering was a question if you're giving assistance with bathing and shower, but the choice of how often and when is probably more of interest to a short-term rehab individual. And then there is sort of choice of choosing your own clothes, but I'm not certain if that is really meaningful in terms of certainly we want to all choose our own clothes, but I don't think that that's a question relevant to this population as much as the other ones. So that's around autonomy and choice. And again, with the interpretive guidelines, nursing homes are having to meet the needs and choices and individual routines and patterns in all these areas based on the new survey process. So I think it's important that we remember that. The other thing is, and I think it's the crux of culture change, is that individualization of care with rhythms and routines and patterns. Resident and family engagement, I felt, was not as strong, and I thought that certainly Eric Coleman's transitions questions would be a real benefit to this survey, because there wasn't a lot of, I know that short-term residents really value being included with decisions and treatment and that their choices are respected, and I didn't see questions in regards to whether or not they were involved in setting those rehab goals and that whether or not their discharge process went well and did the arrangement of services and equipment and needs upon discharge, did that go well? Were you well prepared to go home? Did you have a good understanding of what you're responsible for? So in terms of the engagement of residents, they also want to know that families are engaged and are educated and involved in this decision-making process, as you can obviously see in the care transition measures as well. So I thought that that piece was not there. The doctors were sort of off the hook. We sort of asked whether or not they visited, but this is a core area of concern for me in the nursing home environments, that the doctors aren't as available and sometimes even chart and don't even go see their patients in nursing homes. So, you know, the HCAP surveys on the hospital side really goes to the communication with doctors, and I've seen it really have an impact on our affiliates with doing actually sensitivity training with physicians, because they're rated on how well did they listen and how do they explain things to patients. And I think that's an area that we'd want to really move here, since these short-term residents are really involved and engaged in making some really important decisions as it relates to their care and treatment. The organized activities piece on weekends and evenings, again, their choice to be involved in that, I think they said it was rated low, and I could see why, because we find in our focus groups that they're not as interested in the organized activities, and they feel kind of pushed all the time to do that, and there's just this feeling like they would like, actually, what we hear is the importance of building a relationship. Actually, it's fresh in my mind because I was doing a focus group this week, but that, you know, they wanted to get to know one another and they needed peer support, but the organized activity on weekends and evenings may not be the area that we want to focus on, but something like spirituality and meeting those needs, as well as just do they have access to a computer? Those are sort of, again, maybe not realistic in all nursing homes, but again, they're looking for ways, leisure activities and ways to continue a lot of times their daily life outside of home while they're in the nursing home. The other thing that I think they value is visitors, and while we look at is their private space, which I think is highly valued, the question with the new guidelines, interpretive guidelines, the question is can people visit anytime? So that 24-hour visitation I think would be a benefit. In terms of pain, they focused on medication. Is the medicine provided? And this question about when you're in a nursing home, were you ever left sitting or laying in the same position so long that it hurt? You know, that question concerned me. But I see a lot of innovations in pain, so it's not just around did you get medicine, but like in the HCAP question in the hospitals, I liked the question, did staff do everything they could to manage your pain? Because I do see so many different interventions from massage, aromatherapy to therapeutic distraction being a part of that program for patients, and it's not able to be sort of understood in that way for patients through this survey. And then this question about were you happy, how often were you happy in the nursing home was a bit concerning for me, and was curious as to why and how, what, you know, that question, I certainly understood, you know, did you feel worried as a question, and then think about your life when you're in a nursing home, what number would you rate your life then? Again, those questions I felt, you know, we want to make certain, obviously, we're looking at those things, but potentially in a different way for the short-term patient, because we don't have a really long time, and certainly they're still experiencing a relatively sudden event that they're healing from. So that was sort of just the overview of some of the thoughts on the questions, and thank you for that lengthy opportunity. But I think this is so important and so needed to move improvement in the experience. The testing analysis, I was impressed with the response rates that you've seen with the mailings, particularly on the second mailing, but I was wondering if phone survey was an option. I know that's been highly appreciated in the hospital environment in terms of just being able to get rich verbal feedback when they have someone on the phone, a little bit more comments that allow for a little bit more understanding of the feedback. And I know that phone survey is risk-adjusted, you know, for the reasons that a phone survey tends to be more positive, so I just question whether or not that's an option. As well as the rolling months, I think, was a huge an issue in terms of instead of looking just a two months back, look back, but having sort of the next test be with the rolling months as a consideration. Usability, I thought that, again, due to the questions, I have concerns that it really will look to improve some of the really core things that matter most to short-term residents moving forward. The harmonization is obviously strong in terms of its current use in other environments. The feasibility, again, I think is, again, something that obviously you brought up the cost issue, which is obviously something, but it's important investment. And I would just think that the phone might be an area to explore. And finally, just being sensitive to the fact that nursing homes are, as you noted in your notes, that nursing homes are already conducting many of these surveys. And we find that the ability to not have as much lag time with moving improvement is so important. So I would look at sort of how can we enhance the timing of all this and not, you know, so the lag time that happens is a real challenge because we want as much real-time data as we can. So that's just thoughts on feasibility. I think that's it. Thank you for that lengthy overview. Yeah. But that's what I had to say. Betty, you know, you're the second reviewer.
Yes. Yeah, Heidi and I discussed this measure this morning. We weren't able to connect before that. And she really kind of opened my eyes to how little it did focus on culture change. I was looking at it, I think, more from a regulatory compliance focus. And I think that it does measure minimal regulatory compliance if you're still under like a traditional survey method. But when you look at the new QIS survey, which is much more resident-focused and with interviews and voice and choice as a primary area of interest, I think that it's lacking. So my overall sense of this, I felt it was, I really enjoyed reading the reports that we got. I thought the documentation that was provided with this measure was very clear. I especially was glad to see how careful attention was paid to the way questions were worded so that the maximum opportunity was given to people that would be answering the questions to understand and to be able to answer with a correct answer because they understood what they were asked. But I do think if it's intended to measure culture change engagement, which it kind of, that's kind of the premise in the beginning, that it's lacking. So I like the questions as an administrator. I would want to know those things for my building, but I'm not sure that it's got the culture change tone that would be most useful. So those are my basic comments tacked on to Heidi's.
Okay. I guess I'm not sure what to say in the sense that the time frame when we started was, you know, a very different environment. And I don't know if you've ever had a chance. I did not attach the 400-500-page report that the Rosalie Kane wrote on the quality of life that was contracted by CMS. That we, I think after five rounds of cognitive testing, where we were told to only focus on quality of care, CMS came back to us and said, you need to combine quality of life with the quality of care items that you've developed. And we, at that time, went through, I don't remember, it may have taken a year, to go through all the interpretive guidelines, all the quality of life items from the, you know, from the Keynes report, which at that time was not finished, but and then actually go out and test those to see how people might understand them. And I know we did do, we tested things like spirituality and religion, and we had, there were a lot of issues in what people understood about that and what they perceived to be responsibility of a nursing home. And there was a lot of confusion in the testing in terms of when people would ask, we didn't phrase it as choice of activities or trying to find out what people were interested in. And it was just did not work out. We tried several variations of that in terms of trying to customize something to people that they might want, how to get them engaged in something to keep, and, you know, in terms of activities. And we tried several variants, and I think Carol Cosenza's on the line if she wanted to speak to that. But that's how we tried to go through that, and it just didn't seem to work. And I know in some ways things have changed very differently, but I think the questions, I mean, in terms of culture change and engagement, and we did have a lot of discussion about trying to look at, like, waking up times, you know, flexibility in that respect. But I think at that time we were thinking that terms that waking up time was probably much more difficult to control because of scheduling of tests, scheduling of therapy, that often there isn't much choice, that this is when they have the appointments or whatever. That's why we went into the getting to bed, that not everybody goes to bed at 5 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
you know, so I think I'm just not, I'm just trying to think through what other the other things. We were really trying to focus on care. I think for the short stay, it was more the care aspects. And I'm not sure, you know, as I said, we're still doing the analyses right now about activities and autonomy. And that may not actually come out to be a useful composite for the short stay population. And that's using the 2009 data from Maryland. And there's about 1,828 completed surveys. And I think we're certainly open. We haven't formalized any guidelines or survey administration guidelines for the doing the short stay because we're still in process. But we're certainly concerned about making sure there's enough sample size that persons could not be identified. So we would be open to a rolling schedule. Rolling, it didn't need to be restricted necessarily 2 months. That was our starting point because we were concerned that the recall period might be such that 2 months might be the most wise cutoff. And certainly phone probably could be an option, but we would probably, before we would do that, somebody would have to do a mode effect to see, like you said, that the phone responses may need to be adjusted because they may be more have a more positive bias. Okay.
Judy, if I can just interrupt here real quickly.
Mm-hmm.
We are kind of running out of time on this section of the call, so I want to make sure both that we have time for the other steering committee members to speak and to go over the other two measures.
Okay.
Emma, this is Bruce Boysenault. I just have a quick question of our two reviewers. We sort of are hearing, I think, that there were clinical questions that are being evaluated through the patient's eyes, and that there's another set of culture change issues that in the hospital setting are generally termed concierge questions, but in the nursing home setting, because the person lives there, they take on a new significance. But I guess my question is, as you look at the non-culture side questions in the survey, did the reviewers, just in a simple yes-no, did it pass muster? Is that what's your advice, thumbs up or thumbs down on this to the committee, to the reviewers?
This is Betty Franzen, and I'm the secondary reviewer. When I initially looked at it as from a more clinical